This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're with Lee Chui Lin and Sharat Kutan. Tonight, a debate over which is preferred, a unity government or a minority government.
You'll be hearing from two Malaysians about their perspectives, where they stand on the matter. And of course, we want to hear from you too.
So we don't know what we're going to get yet, but tell us, would you prefer a unity government or a minority government? Call 7733-2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:09, so we are in day four of the hunt for PM10, essentially. We still don't know what's going to happen. I think the very latest that has emerged is that BN has asked for a counter-offer from Perikatan Nasional and said that they will be making their choice by tonight. This is a result of what transpired during the conversation between the leaders of UMNO and the Yang di-Pertuan Agong this morning, at least according to Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, who came out saying that there was a decree that BN should be part of a unity government. And they had previously said that they were happy to stay in the opposition. So now the mathematics have changed. Now, I think before we get into this discussion, right, it's worth starting with a WhatsApp from Yap, who says, "Hi, what is the difference between a unity government and a minority government?"
Yeah, that's very good. And you might want to throw mixed government into the into this bag as well, because I think the traditional definition of kind of coming out of kind of a political science framework is that a unity government or a national unity government is a government made up of the major contenders, right, the major rivals, such that if you have a government where, in fact, the opposition is minuscule. And you see that coming out of after May 13th, we had suspension of parliamentary democracy. We came out of that. Barisan Nasional, in fact, in many ways, was a national unity government. It had almost all the political parties there. Some opposition, Gerakan, moved from being in opposition to in government. So that's a national unity government. A mixed government would be, and I think this would actually what PHBN would look like. A PHBN government would be actually more mixed.
Well, anybody with BN, right, actually?
Is a mixed government, not a unity government. Unity government in this context would be PH and PN. And then, of course, we have minority government, which is the largest party within parliament, not having sufficient numbers, but having to deal with questions of their own legitimacy on a case-by-case basis as they put legislation through.
Usually functioning with a confidence and supply agreement, but not always.
Yeah, not always, but yes. Possible. And that's what people like about minority government, because of the confidence supply agreement element of it.
I'm trying to remember the exact phrase that Dr. Wong Chin Huat used on our show yesterday. I don't want to misquote him, but I think it was something to the effect of they're surviving day to day. That's what happens with a minority government without a CSA. So anyways, hope that helps. And for everyone else listening, hope that helps as well, because that sets up the rest of our conversation today as we wait to see what version of our government is going to emerge. We'd like to hear from you. Would you prefer a unity government, minority government, or a mixed government? Because now that's in play as well. That number to call to weigh in is 7733-2900. You can send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we have two guests today to kind of handle both sides of this discussion. We've got lawyer Go Chia Yi and columnist Andrew Xia. Chia Yi, Andrew, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, Andrew, let's start with you. You wrote a piece in Malaysia Kini called Seven Reasons to Support a Unity Government. So seven there, but can you walk us through your stance on this and why you think it's the way forward?
Well, obviously, we need some kind of unity government because, either Pakatan or SPN do not have the numbers. So if it's just PN plus maybe BN, you know, or Pakatan with somebody, the numbers will be just hovering slightly below 112 or just slightly above. So it's not very stable. So to have a larger coalition, let's say Pakatan, BN, GPS will come up to almost over 130. So the first reason, number one, is stability of numbers. And for me, the biggest benefit of a unity government is that it will stop, or it will at least reduce, the racial demonizing. And why do I say that? Because if one of the major parties, let's say UMNO or PN, is in this unity government, how can they keep on demonizing DAP and Harapan when they are now official partners in the government? It doesn't make sense, right? So that's the biggest benefit. So I hope a unity government can stop all this racial politicking, which is really unproductive. It has not helped in the past 33 months. You know, after the Sheraton move, we had the BNPN government. Many problems were not resolved. We see soaring inflation, poor young graduates coming out having to become grab food delivery riders, things like that. So it's a lack of quality jobs, many problems. So let's get down to solving our core economic problems.
Okay, I just want to stop it there, Andrew, because I think if that's in fact the reason for most of these, we all want some functioning government that it solves problems. Chiayi, you have suggested that you think a minority government might actually be the way to go. Why is it that you think that it has more pros than cons?
Well, I believe that our country is moving into a new phase of democracy. So I think prior to this general election, there has been a lot of focus on this 112 number and the need to meet the number in order for us to form a government. I think having a shift away from that idea of 112 and start considering having a form of government that is not just dependent on the numbers, I think is an evolution of the democracy that we have. So it's not like an idea that has only the first time ever been mooted in history. Minority governments have been formed across the world for many countries, and I think there's a system that we can definitely adopt from Malaysia. But also another point is that I think that Perikatan National Leader Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin already has stated quite clearly that he does not wish to work with Pakatan Harapan in the moment. And I believe that these two coalitions are coalitions which hold very different principles. And then there may be a difficulty in both of these coalitions to work together under the banner of a unity government. And while Andrew has said about the racial demonization being lessened if both of these coalitions were to work together, I believe that this might not necessarily be the case, in the sense that because of the very different nature of these two coalitions, we might not actually see the racial demonization going down. What we may see is that there may be a very core disagreement between these coalitions that will make a cooperation between both of them under the banner of unity government not so possible.
I want to return with both of you to explore that point about stability in a bit more detail after this. We do have to take a quick break, though. But in the meantime, we want to hear from you as well. Would you prefer a unity government, minority government, or mixed government in general? Do you have thoughts on day four of this continuing search for PM10? You can call 7733-2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with Goh Chiayi and Andrew Sia after this. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:19 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharad. We've got a debate of sorts today on basically unity government versus minority government. We're throwing in mixed government into it because that is, at this moment in time, quite a real possibility. We'd like to hear from you. Which of the three would you prefer? You can call 7733 2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So earlier on, I think we were touching on this issue of what offers the most stability. And I'd like to ask both of you really what your hopes are, how you define stability, at least in the short to medium term, right? In the next, say, two and a half years, and why you think either the unity or minority government is best placed to provide that. Andrew?
In the end, it boils down to numbers, right? I mean, personally, I wish that Harapan had won 130 seats. Then it would be a stable government and there's no argument there. But, you know, they don't have the numbers now, so they have to try to form a coalition. I have nothing against a minority government if the system allows it. I'm a bit apprehensive that certain powers to be may not be too happy with, you know, Harapan taking power and all that. So if it's not allowed, and, you know, the Yang Diputan Agong has already is pushing for a unity government, I think what he means is that he wants more, perhaps, Malay representation, you know, for that kind of stability in that sense. We can object and all that, you know, we can talk about legal principles, about minority governments being acceptable elsewhere in the world. But, you know, this is Malaysia and there are certain so-called, political realities that we have to deal with. So in the end, it's about numbers. If a government just has 112 or let's say even worse, 108 or 107, we saw the kind of instability that we had when Muhyiddin first took over, and there was so much, roller coaster going on, and then Muhyiddin tried to stop the parliament from meeting because obviously he didn't have the numbers, he wasn't confident. And then, you know, suddenly you had more frogs like Xavier jumping over and all that. So to stop all these games and, you know, a good stable majority, let's say 125, 130, is preferable.
So, Chiayu, what's your take on stability and why do you think a minority government might actually provide that?
So, admittedly, minority governments aren't as stable as unity governments. But I think one thing that we have to take into consideration is that if we're talking about unity government between Pakatan Harapan and Perikatan Nasional, we must also consider the fact that Perikatan Nasional is made out of Bersatu, which are basically MPs that were previously part of Pakatan Harapan. So we are in a scenario where after J14, we had Pakatan Harapan become the government of the day. But even after they became government, there was disagreement and disunity between the political parties, which led to the change of government. So how can we say that it won't happen again if a unity government were to be formed within Pakatan Harapan and Perikatan Nasional, considering the fact that the individuals in Perikatan Nasional are the same individuals that formed a government with Pakatan Harapan back in G14. So I think that is something that definitely has to be taken into consideration. If we have a unity government, let's say, for example, between Pakatan Harapan and Perikatan Nasional, there would be no guarantee that Perikatan Nasional will then retract the support for the unity government and collaborate with other parties or coalitions such as Barisan Nasional or GPS. So we may have another situation where our focus on the 112 becomes a problem because suddenly there's a retraction of their support and we're back to square one. I think taking the first step to recognize, okay, a government can exist without reaching that 112 number is an evolution in our democracy. And I believe that recognizing the fact that a government can exist without that number is something that could perhaps be considered to be more stable in that sense.
Right. I want to ask you both a question around the issue of values and shared values or the lack of shared values. We had in the past Pakatan Rakyat in that incarnation, remember, had a common policy platform and it had the DAP, it had passed there. Is that possible? If you have whatever differences you might, if you come to an agreement about a common policy platform that's limited, wouldn't that work across divides, across ideological and policy divides? Andrew, very quickly.
I agree with Chiayi that Harapan and PN alliance would be unwieldy because both blocks are of almost equal size and obviously they are in different directions. That's why I wrote in my article that I would prefer a unity government of Harapan and Barisan Nasional and GPS because these are more, you know, I mean, Barisan Nasional is officially multiracial, although it's, you know, UMNO dominated. And GPS is, of course, very much multiracial. So that is a better fit and more, you know, less clash of basic principles.
Except Andrew, right. So, Andrew, just jump in there. I think we've defined that configuration as a mixed government, that unity governments are ones that, in fact, bring the main contenders, the big guys, so that, you know, they form a spread that's unshakable. That's what a national unity government is, not quite what you described. Would you disagree?
As a matter of definition, sure. I mean, feel free to define mixed government as Barisan with Harapan. I mean, but I think that is the better option. And we already see them forming, or they've already formed the state government in Perak, and they're trying to form a Barisan Harapan state government in Pahang. So, you know, obviously, you can already see there is a better fit there. As for PAS, well, it's sad. I mean, PAS used to be more open. They used to have a slogan called PAS for All. Remember that? Back in the good old days of 2008 when Nick Aziz was still around. Unfortunately, PAS has become more radicalized after the death of Nick Aziz, you know, whom I very much respected. And Hadi Awang seems to be taking the party in a very racial and extreme direction. So that's the problem.
Okay, so Chiayi, what's your take on this? The idea of making something work across deep divides. And does the minority government solve that problem?
I think while most of us saw the results of this general election as a surprise, or that suddenly there is a rise of fascism or racism in Malaysia, or support for kind of a new ethnic centrist party, but I think that what it revealed was simply the nature of our country. And there can be an agreement on policy and so on, but I do believe that if you have a unity government with between certain parties like PAS, AP, what we might be doing is that we might actually be brushing over these issues so that we may actually form this illusion that everything will be okay and everybody is united, when there will be no focus on addressing these things because of the thought, oh, everybody is united and the government is representing everyone. What I think is important for this country in this moment is to, if there are clear lines between each coalition, then I think there can be a focus on exactly what's happening in our country. And I think that pretending to form this banner of unity government by name, calling it unity, may in effect have this illusion that everything's okay, which may then cause some long-term problems down the road. So that is something to consider as well. Of course, a minority government can also have a confidence and supply agreement with, you know, several other parties as well. In fact, I think that a minority government would actually be more democratic, substantively speaking, because there would be need to have a discussion with all parties involved. So let's say, for example, you know, each coalition have their own manifestos and so on, and what they think that how the economy should be developed and where it should be taken to. I think having minority government emphasizes the fact that everybody will have to discuss with each other on these policies, but it doesn't mean that they all have to agree on it necessarily. So that's just some of my thoughts on the issue.
We're speaking today with Goh Chia Yee, a lawyer as well as columnist Andrew Xia, and kind of circling the question of minority, unity, mixed governments, because at this moment in time, we still don't know what configuration our next government will take. We'd like to hear from you, though. Do you have thoughts on this? Do you have a preference? That number to call is 7733 2900. Send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back for more after this as well as your messages. So do keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharad. And today we are having a discussion slash debate on what would work better for us. What is preferred? A unity government, a mixed government, a minority government? We'd like to hear from you. Do you have a preference? You can call 7733 2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. So we have a few things going on. We've got guests, Goh Chia Yee, criminal lawyer, and Andrew Xia, columnist. We'll return to them shortly. We do also, however, have a caller on the line with us. We've got Linda. Linda, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening. Is this Lynn and Gerard?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So my thoughts is actually I've been driving on the way home. And so as I've been listening on to BFM talking about unity or coalition or having a minority government, I think personally I prefer a minority government because personally I don't like the fact that, you know, PN and BN is you know, using the racial card and also the religion as well, you know, in order to, you know, form whatever to get more votes, you know, in their campaigns and things like that. So I think as a minority, even though yes, it is not a common thing, I think at least we get something new, fresh, and maybe somewhat untainted from, you know, the previous mindset.
Yeah, Linda, I'd like to ask you about this. One of the things about the minority government is that it will have to reach across the aisle to the various coalitions to support it in passing budgets or in terms of legislation. So whatever distaste they might have for their rivals across the parliamentary aisle, they're going to have to reach out. Would you be comfortable seeing that the party that you prefer as a minority government will actually have to do deals with other parties, including ones that you have distaste for?
I think in certain matters, I think they still have to, you know, at some point, they still have to put, you know, and make a deal with them. So I think it's still, I mean, for certain things, I think it's fine. But then I think it's so much better if they can, you know, just be on their own, you know, without having the, you know, a bit of that you know, that previous and old mindset and things like that, because I think everyone is just, you know, fed up with how, you know, the country has been run before this, you know. And I think that's why in the recent voting that you know, that you see many are actually against the, what do you call, the opposition or things like that. So I think maybe for certain things, yeah, you are required to, you know, make deals with them and whatnot. But I think to move forward for Malaysia to become more of a, you know, successful and things like that. So I think it's so much better if they can, you know, propose better reforms and things like that. Because I don't see how the current BN and PN and also PH is going to work together. You know, since one party is saying like this, you know, they don't really see eye to eye, you know.
Yeah, Linda, absolutely. I think that covered a lot of ground, particularly in terms of seeing eye to eye and being able to work together slash pushing through reforms. Now, to your point, Sharad, about the kind of compromises required, right? The question of what a minority government needs to do to push through policy is an interesting one. Chia Yee, maybe I'd like to ask you to come in on this point and explain, I guess, just a little bit what what a minority government would need to do to survive. There's something we've talked about elsewhere on the show as well. And then I have a separate question for both of you.
Okay, Lynn. Just to answer Sharad's point on the compromise with, let's say, for example, if Pakatan Harapan were to form a minority government, compromise with certain political coalitions that they may not necessarily want to compromise with, I think the difference is that if you have a unity government, you're kind of bound with that political coalition. So, for example, if Pakatan Harapan forms unity government with Perikatan Nasional, they're kind of bound to consider the views of Perikatan Nasional only. But if Pakatan Harapan is a minority government, they can actually consider cooperation with many different coalitions. So not just Perikatan Nasional, they can consider cooperation with Barisan Nasional, GPS, GRS. So there is that flexibility of choice over there. And another key point, I think, is the fact that the minority government will have their own ministers and they don't have to compromise together with Perikatan Nasional, who should be a minister, who should take up these ministerial positions and so on. So I think the flexibility there is the difference in terms of that compromise. Well, as a unity government, you may very well have to include this particular coalition and their desires into your governance and into your policies.
I wanted to ask you both also about a point that Linda raised, which is this idea of doing something radical and interesting and that being an appropriate response to this impasse that we find ourselves in. I'm wondering whether you both feel that same sense of curiosity slash hunger for a different way of doing things. Andrew, your thoughts?
Well, like I say, in an ideal world, Harapan would get the majority. And then, of course, we'll have a lot more exciting and interesting changes that I think we'll see in Malaysia. But, you know, they didn't. I guess there's no choice but to have some compromise. As I said, you know, it's probably the best fit, the so-called, as you say, mixed government with Barisan and GPS. I would look forward, you know, to certain things. I mean, both coalitions have certain things in their manifestos. So obviously certain things can be agreed on. For example, helping the B40. I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? Everybody agrees to that. And okay, maybe some of the more contentious things we can keep aside for a while. The other thing will be fighting corruption. Theoretically, Barisan and GPS should also not object to that. But although we know that, you know, they have their own so-called past practices. Unfortunately, because the numbers are not sufficient, and you know, the Agong seems to be really pushing for a minority government. A unity government. So I guess we have to see how it goes.
And Andrew, you actually make a point in your piece suggesting that Anwar Ibrahim, as Prime Minister, would demonstrate the political will to curb corruption in the way that other candidates wouldn't. The question I have actually for Chia Yi is, should we rely on political figures and individuals to reassure the public that, say, the fight against corruption will happen? Couldn't that be, in fact, in the agreements between political parties?
Well, officially, go ahead, Chia Yi.
Yeah, so I believe that definitely relying just on the word of a politician is not necessarily something that we as the public have to do, but we definitely have to be vigilant on our own end to ensure that these policy or changes, legal changes, are implemented. But definitely, I think that what I mentioned earlier as well, there's this flexibility of choice. So let's say, for example, Pakatan Harapan wants to implement more anti-corruption law or any sort of policy like that. If let's say, for example, Barisan Nasional not so keen on doing that, they can always speak to Perikatan Nasional on agreeing on something like a policy in regards to that. So there's always this multiple parties that they can always negotiate with or come to an agreement with. So I think having a minority government definitely would be a better direction towards implementing these kind of changes or radical changes, because there's always this a bunch of parties that you can pick and choose from. In order to achieve that the number that they need to approve these policies and these laws.
So, in closing then, you've both spoken about why you prefer your stances. We don't know yet how it's going to all play out. Is there a thought or a message you'd like to leave everyone with? Andrew, maybe you can start us off.
For one, I definitely do not want to see a repeat of the past 33 months of havoc, right? Which was caused by a very slim majority that, you know, Muhyiddin and then after that Ismail had. And in fact, we should remember Ismail Sabri stabilized his government by having an MOU with Harapan, right? So that was the backstop that prevented the so-called court cluster led by Zahid to remove him and to push him off as prime minister. So, I wish Harapan had won, but, you know, if a minority government is possible, yeah, I'll say go for it. But if not, unfortunately, compromises are needed, and such are political realities.
Chiayi?
I think at the end of the day, we need to remember that Pakatan, in fact, did win the general elections. They had the majority of vote from voters in the country. And I believe that right now we might see things as being chaotic or unstable, but it's all part of the democratic process. It shows that the democratic process is working. I think this is an evolution in our democracy that we just need to learn to adapt to. It's not something that is new in the world. A lot of other countries have experienced this as well. In fact, there are many countries in which the negotiations take place for months before a government is formed. So it's something that is necessary. So there's always this idea that the government or the civil service are linked together, like you need a government to be formed in order for the civil service to run. But I think that idea has to change. We need to realize that the civil service is separate from the government and that, in fact, our country can, in fact, continue running even when we don't have a government. And I think that idea is important because for 60-plus years, we had this situation where we have perhaps merged the idea of a political party with the civil service, but now we need to separate that idea and understand that the government is separate from that. And whatever we're going through now, I know everybody is perhaps anxious, they're worried, or they're constantly refreshing their timelines, but everybody should know that it's normal. We're going towards the right direction, which our country needs to go. At the end of the day, we just need to be patient, and we have a government, and we just need to focus on what needs to be done in the future. So I just think that's the message I'd like to leave.
Andrew, Chiayi, thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Welcome.
That was lawyer Goh Chiayi and columnist Andrew Sia, kind of providing both perspectives on the question of a unity government or a minority government. We're also throwing a third phrase in there, mixed government. Let us know if you have a preference. You can call 7733-2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Business, finance and music. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:51 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharad. We've been asking you today if you would prefer a unity government or a mixed government or a minority government, because at this moment in time, all three of those things are still possible. So let us know if you have a preference. You can call 7733-2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now on the phone, I believe, we have Madi. Madi, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. Good evening. I'm thinking it's still morning. Anyway, good evening. The position we are in, the Raya in, after the G15, is that we don't have a government. And every leader of the parties have been interviewed, and nothing seems to be going forward. In this situation, after ideally a unity government will be the ideal situation for all of us, but at the present moment, with the declaration of the various leaders of the parties, I think a minority government should work. The reason I'm saying it, based on like what Gerard mentioned earlier, that, you know, how do you get a budget passing? I'm sure a minority government can get a budget passing because none of the other MPs would stand in the way of not voting for budget and paying the civil servants. Definitely. So civil servants, which takes a major part of their budget, will be paid. The budget will be passed. And other projects which are ongoing will all be passed because they have a stake in it in one some way. So budget should not be a consideration. It will be passed even with a minority government.
Madi?
And at least we have a part, a government, working government in place. That's the reason. Yeah.
Madi, thank you so much for calling and for sharing. You know, I think that point about the budget is actually a very interesting one.
But if you have a hostile opposition, you know, the question is, what would be their what would be the benefit in allowing the government that they would like to bring down continue, right? So they are, if you expect, if you take a generous view of Malaysian politics, which might not be something that's actually prevailing, then, of course, you might come to Madi's position. Madi, I think you're very right. I mean, you're trying to assure us that actually some things might actually work despite. The other way to do it is, in fact, in having the CSA. I mean, you know, something Andrew mentioned, the CSA would preempt this kind of, you know, brinksmanship that happens during something like a budget debate, if you come to it with the sense that already you have the support because you've had a discussion about what that budget should reflect in terms of priorities, right? So it could be pre-baked. It doesn't have to be, you know, there in the final vote, as it were.
We also have a voice note that came in. I'm going to say first, though, that across the board, people seem to be more pro-minority government than anything else. And one of the people saying that is actually Fayyad.
I quite like the idea of having a minority government because then you split the conversation three ways while maintaining the identity of the parties. For the time being, we can see that the parties, they all carry certain form of negative connotation or anecdotes against each other. Having a minority government will actually push the conversation to focus more towards the policies. Now, let's say, for example, Party A were to propose Amendment A, and then we can actually see Party B and Party C not being in total agreement or perhaps form a proper justification on why they would argue that act and that amendment. So essentially, the rakyat will win, in my opinion, if we have a minority government, because it will actually pit these parties to focus more on their justifications, their white papers, and also the policies. And plus, it'll actually make the politics a bit more boring because it'll focus more on policies instead of race and other form of anecdotes.
Fayyad, you had me at boring. I am ready for boring. I think a lot of people are. I also like this idea of, I don't know how happy I would be with this in practice, but in theory, the idea of constant justification of your positions, your policies, your papers, all the rest of it, I think is actually absolutely the way to go.
Yeah, that's very interesting that by having a minority government, the focus will be on policy. I do think, though, what's also emerging, Lynn, in this conversation we're having is that our language needs to be a little more disciplined, right? So we recognize, say, for instance, that and I think Chia Yee said this, you know, that PH won, was the majority. In fact, PH didn't win. They didn't win as a majority. What they did was they had the highest numbers of seats, but a majority is established once you hit 112, that's a majority, right? The simple, what we call a simple majority. So yeah, in a sense, you have more, but it's not a majority. So it's a bit technical, and I don't mean to be pedantic. Again, the word unity. Unity is, it's got that normative dimension. We all like to be together, so unity is that. But unity in this instance actually refers to a specific kind of political formation, right? So yeah, I think this is what we're all having to educate ourselves about the different forms of government that are available to us.
We also have this from Steve, who says, you know, then go for a minority government like overseas in Canada and Slovenia, attaching a screenshot of at Ruffleseed listing a bunch of minority governments, including Canada, Norway, Spain, Pakistan, Croatia, Sweden and Slovakia.
Yeah, very interesting. Why does something like that work in a country like Canada? Why might it not work in a country like Malaysia? I think we understand that there are always questions of culture and history that are implicated in the way in which other nations have come to some sort of accommodation about their politics, right? So is it, are we ready to have a minority government? Are we going to find deep antagonisms within the electoral college, the assembly, the parliament, that will make, in fact, a minority government unworkable proposition? What needs to happen for that to work? Do you have to have a kind of cooperative spirit that says, okay, we'll work in a bipartisan fashion on this legislation because it actually benefits the nation or each party, whatever. Or we just have entrenched positions that are combative that will try at every instance to bring down the current government.
It's not all minority governments, though. I mean, we're going to come back, I think, to more of these exchanges, because actually across the board, minority, unity and mixed all have their supporters. But I just wanted to close off for now with this from Vinotini, who says, I would prefer a unity government only if it consists of the winners of the Peninsula, Pakatan Harapan, and Borneo, GPS and GRS. If this is not possible, then the minority government of Pakatan Harapan is much better off. And we've been talking a lot about compromise. I thought that lent an interesting color to it. We're going to be back for more of your thoughts. So if you have a preference, unity, minority, mixed government, all of those things are possible at this moment in time. Call us 7733 2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
It is 7:08 and you are listening to Lynn and Sherrod trying to process the continuing confusion of it being day four in the hunt for PM10, in the search for PM10, perhaps it's more accurate to say, because we still don't know who is going to make up the next government. There were developments today, which we'll likely cover tomorrow. Sherrod, what do you think are the big things to know from today?
Well, there are a lot of things. But before that, I need to say this. We were talking about Wakanda. In Malaysia, it could be Wak Ayanda.
Sherrod was so pleased with this pun. He typed it and now he said it.
I need to say it. I really did need to say it. Okay, look, what we know at this point in time is I think the palace has a certain idea about what would be good for the country, and they put it out there on the table. I think it's been fairly transparent. The question is, with all the different players, what are they bringing to the table, right? So Pakatan Harapan brings the fact that it's the largest in parliament. It's not the majority, it's just the largest coalition. The question is now, how will they form alliances? And then if Pakatan Harapan can't do that, the next up is Perikatan. What kind of alliances can they form, and can they push towards something like a majority, meaning they go past 112 and achieve a stable majority? That is the game at the moment. And what we see with the politicians, you know, gathering at St. Regis or in their living rooms, is an attempt to find some modus vivendi. How do you live together when you have different, and you have in fact fought a bitter campaign against each other? How do you find a way of living together and delivering on certain agendas?
Just so there's some math, once more, it is 82 seats for Pakatan Harapan. It is 73 seats for Perikatan Nasional. And it's what seems to be the all-important king-making 30 seats for Barisan Nasional. So that's where it stands. And Barisan Nasional has also said that after today, who did they meet with? They met with the Agong, following which they met with PN leaders in St. Regis. And now they have said, well, okay, so we have the offer from Pakatan Harapan. They're asking for PN to give them a counter offer in writing, and that they'll decide. This is, of course, also ahead of the King meeting with the Conference of Rulers tomorrow. So Hopefully, I don't want to overpromise. I think who knows, but hopefully by tomorrow we'll have a clearer picture.
We'll have a clearer. I think every day we've had a clearer picture of what the terms might be for compromise, right? So if you look at any number of media outlets, they are now revealing the details of a Pakatan Harapan Barisan National Pact. That's kind of a mixed government, not a unity government, but a mixed government. And what would that be in terms of roles and positions they might take? How would they decide on certain issues of policy and such? So all that's now being revealed, and I think it's very interesting that we're getting to this point, because one of the things that a lot of analysts, as well as I think just us as general, as citizens, don't want is cloak and dagger stuff and hidden agendas. What we would like is everybody laying out their cards and achieving an optimal result.
We do have a caller on the line with us. We've got Kyle. Kyle, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Right. Hello. Ideally, I would like to have a minority government, but I think in practice, in the idea, of course, in the future, BN and PN can work together to topple, the PH government. Right? So unless this can be stopped, I think having a minority government may not be a practical one. So yeah, thank you.
Kyle, thanks for that call. I see the worry about that, and minority government and stability is one that comes up. I will also just say, though, that as we've seen in the last few years, there really isn't any guarantee at this moment in time, especially if we don't resolve the very deep rifts that exist within the parties. There really is no guarantee that at any given moment in time, you won't have people working to topple the government anyway.
Yeah, so we have the anti-hopping law that's kind of dampened that. I don't think it excludes games being played of that level, but it's a parliamentary game, right? So in some sense, it's a legitimate. The other thing, of course, is that stability was achieved for Ismail Sabri through a confidence and supply agreement. We call the MOU. A minority government taking over would have to work very hard to cobble that together. Now, why is it that Pakatan Harapan was willing to give Ismail Sabri's government a CSA and stabilize his government? Would it be reciprocated? So if Pakatan Harapan was in a minority government, would other forces, in this case, an UMNO Barisan National, would they agree to a CSA in order to stabilize the Pakatan Harapan government going forward? I think it does come back to political culture, the way political parties and leaders and, the previous culture of winner-take-all, it is the type of culture that we've had. Are we transiting out of that? I think it's a big question.
So if we look at a sampling of the messages that we've been getting, let's start with some pro-minority government thoughts. Kim Hock is making a point that was made earlier as well, that minority governments should be supported by other parties through CSA. There are many successful minority governments in the world. We also have, Lauren, who says, a minority government is a good shift. Pakatan Harapan should be the minority government because they have the highest number of seats, but this is open to much political instability. The country may only suffer further with economic decision-making in parliament due to the issue of boycotts. Since PN has championed a Malay-represented government, selecting a minority government may only open it up to more racial sentiment issues. So with the given condition that it should be a unity government for the betterment of the country, Pakatan Harapan, BN and GPS.
Yeah, so just also another bit of kind of confusion about language. A minority government is not a government of minorities, meaning, ethnic and religious minorities. It just means in terms of numbers, right? So I think the attempt to cast a group, I think Pakatan Harapan faced that in 2018, as being dominated by one ethnic group, or at least suggesting that the majority community, the Malay Muslim community, is not well represented, was in part of the kind of propaganda. It was the backlash in 2018, and that continued for the 22 months of the PH government. We know that that's also being used as a way of sullying the pact that's been achieved in Perak. I believe an Exco Terengganu Exco member also made this comment with regard to Perak. But you know, this is the question: is whether Perakians agree with this and what they see, and you know, and what is said about their government. Will they dismiss it? Will there be a kind of cognitive dissonance? In which case, they'll just shrug it off. They can use that propaganda, but it might not, in fact, you know, take root or resonate with them.
So those are some minority, pro-minority government points of view. We do have a voice note, though, from Sabrina, who's talking more about the potential of a unity government.
Hi, we should learn from Australia. They tried a minority government and during Julia Gillard premiership, and it didn't work because they couldn't get the carbon tax passed. So a unity government would make more sense to pass bills and, you know, get things done. If you have a minority government, then knowing our politicians, they are not going to cooperate and just be a pest and block any proposal or, you know, whatever the minority government is trying to push in parliament.
Sabrina, thanks for that point of view.
Yeah, politicians as pests. I think what, Sabrina, you do brilliantly is to put your finger on the question of our political culture. Will that change? From today onward, will we have a kind of cooperative spirit in parliament that will help the nation rather than... Because, you know, the thing about parliament is that you can be uncooperative and everybody's watching you. And they will know what you're doing. I mean, some will be partisan and think, well, that's great. We want to bring down this government. But others will say, why are you doing this? At a time of crisis, we know, you know, growth is going to slow down with the global recession. Why are you trying to stop attempts at dealing and managing with real life problems? So I think this is where, you know, political culture will evolve, don't you think?
I would hope so. One would hope so. I do think, though, that at this moment in time, unless a lot of it is happening behind closed doors at the moment, and I understand why, these are sensitive and presumably intense discussions about, one hopes, not just seats, but also the future and direction of the country. But I was thinking about something, about what a few political parties said yesterday, that if they were to enter into collaboration with any of their previously sworn enemies, it's going to involve a lot of explanation to the grassroots, right? And to say, this is why this is happening. I know this is what we told you, but, you know, for the sake of whatever it may be, expediency, political survival, these are the things that we now need to do. And I think until we've tamped down the very real issue of identity politics playing such a big role in terms of how political parties speak to their supporters, it's going to be so difficult to change the tone as well of policy discussions. I know that they should be separate, but they often aren't.
They aren't, but you know, so okay, so where are we in the journey to become a democracy, a fuller democracy? And democracy is not a promise of perfection or progress. You know, it is a long and a zigzaggy road, isn't it? And there's a lot of two steps forward, one step back, and so on and so forth. Mm. But what we do hope comes with the resolution of this particular, you can call it a crisis, or at least this moment between the polls and the formation of a government, is, in fact, this learning process for all of us. The question is, are we open to listen to the other side? Yes, there were all these antagonisms to this, the point of the polls. But at this point in time, can we set them aside and say, okay, and this is why exercises, and we had Teva, who is a data scientist, come out and says, well, the thing about Malaysia is that we don't have a preferential system. So we're not forced to say, who's your second line? If you can't get your first, who? What would be the next best? What we often have is people saying, understandably, don't settle for second best. When in fact, in a democratic system, you probably have to settle for second best. You need to compromise. That's the spirit of democracy.
We received a voice note from Michael, who who makes this point. I don't think we're going to play the whole voice note because unfortunately we don't have a lot of time. But Michael says we shouldn't even be talking about a minority or unity government when BN has stated their intention to be in the opposition. Now, just a quick clarification. The reason why we are is because today, after the meeting between two of UMNO's leaders and the Yang di-Pertuan Agong, Ahmad Zahid Hamidi said to Malaysia Kini that they've received a decree for BN to be a part of a unity government, hence the inclusion of that option. Because otherwise, it is true that the idea, not so much of a unity, but a mixed government actually wouldn't be in the picture if BN were in fact to continue to abstain.
Yeah, so we have talked about the question of whether, you know, they should be forced to take a position, whether they should be respected in wanting to hang back and, you know, restore their own party.
Presuming that that was a sincere wish.
Yes.
Also,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, but yes, it's a... The negotiations are pushing forward. You see these kinds of headlines now. Ashraf Wajidi, Harapan gentlemanly in talks, unlike stealthy... Perikatan Nasional.
So, okay. Who knows? I don't know. There's a lot of clutter, I think, in the news at the moment, understandably. Hopefully by tomorrow. Again, I keep saying this. I don't want to promise. I don't want to be a part of the problem. Who knows? Keep those thoughts coming. Minority government, unity government, mixed government. If you have a preference, let us know what it is. We'll be back for more of your thoughts after this. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 7:22 and this is Inside Story with Lynn and Sherrod, in which we have been exploring the possible permutations. Yesterday was very party-based, but today it's actually what kind of government, right, it's going to look like, whether it's a unity government, which should theoretically comprise of the two biggest contenders. In our case, it would be Pakatan Harapan and Perikatan Nasional. PN has said no to that, but nevertheless, the phrase is still being bandied about. Or a mixed government, which would be whoever can presumably command the confidence with someone else. So whatever composition gets you over 112. Or a minority government in which a party with the largest share of seats has to be the minority government and be put to the test in parliament.
Yeah, and you know, and of course, with the best way of stabilizing a minority government, we talked about before, would be with confidence and supply agreements with various factions within parliament, and also. You know, as they negotiate the budget or they negotiate some legislation that they want to pass, they would have to then persuade those other factions. The question is, do we have a parliamentary culture that allows not just for antagonism, because I think that's built into the system, but also cooperation? We saw it in Undi 18. We had bipartisan cooperation in order to pass that legislation unanimously.
We saw it in a few bills, actually. So those are the three kind of possible options at the moment. And we've been asking you for your preference. I will say, I won't be able to read all the messages, unfortunately. Thank you so much to everyone for sending them through. But, for instance, we've got Patrick, Cheryl, Joey, Casey, Roshidi, all supporting minority governments. And Hazman adding on, minority government, the opposition won't show up to parliament anyway most of the time to vote for policies to be approved.
Yeah, well, we know that is a problem. But I think there's something more important. It's not just like, well, you know, we can have a minority government and just wish that we won't have problems along the way. I mean, any party coming into that position will have to anticipate roadblocks. They will have to anticipate forms of communication that will facilitate a cooperation. We will have to have a parliamentary system that's so much more mature. We had very strong executive control for decades that repressed, I think, Parliament and its role. I think with Pakatan coming to power in 2018, we had some parliamentary reforms, parliamentary select committees, where, in fact, a lot of important work is done behind the scenes. The maturing of our parliamentary system really could benefit from this particular type of form. Though, like you say, it's all up to the players at the moment. We did our part. We voted. Now that college has to do its job.
Diana and Bing are both making more or less the same joke, saying, Rojak, a rojak government. Diana even adding on a chapalang government to Malaysianize the flavor. So, you know, there are some people who are pro-mixed government, which, as we've described, is really any combination of parties that isn't PHPN that gets over the line. We also have, though, and I wanted to get to this, a voice note from Nick.
To be fair, until now, we haven't actually got a clear picture what does the Agong mean by a unity government. If he were to say, hey, let's form a unity government, he could just titah je lah, you know, just tell to all the political parties. But it seems that he's reaching out as if he wants two or three coalitions to form a stable government. So if a unity government means no partisan and everybody gets a share of the cake, then why go through all this hassle, you know?
Similarly, so that was Nick. We do also have MZ saying, if everyone wins, why need an election? If no one wins, why need an election? If the losers can group together to win, why need an election? If those who lost can get elected into cabinet by being made a senator, why need an election?
Yeah, you know, one of the resolutions to the problem is to actually return us to another election. I mean, that happens in other countries.
Yes.
when you know, governments can't be formed, or they're unstable and they fall apart.
How
right?
much did GE cost again?
I think there are a lot of things that maybe we can stop building hideous public art, you know, in roadsides and save that money for elections. I think it's worth spending money on elections, to be honest. I think it's the question is, will it resolve things if things on the ground don't change, right? So what is it that are these fissures that we see in society deeply embedded and unlikely to shift? In which case, another election is not going to resolve the problem. We're going to have the same, almost the same result.
Yeah.
And we'll have, you know, again, we'll be back at square one about the formation of government. So dealing with what we have now, yes, you know, we don't have a winner-take-all situation. You can't have it all, apparently, in a democracy. It's something that we're all waking up to. You can't have it all. Your team has to share the prize with everybody. And the question is, if that is shared in a way that is optimal for the Malaysian public in terms of policy, in terms of responding to economic crisis, in terms of, you know, dealing with our structural problems, why not?
So if we go back then to the question that was asked, why need an election? I think the whole point of this, and this is something we've talked about before, right? It's about where we, the people, enter the equation. Because without an election, then it really is truly just parties making decisions over our heads. And we don't even control who is going to represent us in those conversations, right? What happens after? How responsible they want to be? How communicative and open they want to be? All of that, I do think, is part of a culture that we should address. Once the dust has settled, it should be addressed. You know, could this have happened in a more open-minded way, in some senses, open-minded in conversation, but also open after that to the rest of us to know what was discussed. I think all of that is valid. But to the question of why need an election, which is a very easy one to ask, I know why we're asking it. Where else do we enter the picture, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, people who are disappointed say, I'll never vote again. You know, I say to them, you know, 2018, that was a breach in the wall of authoritarianism, a decades-long authoritarianism, couldn't have been achieved without people, couldn't achieve without voters coming out and voting. And so if you keep faith with the idea that voting may be too slowly for you, maybe, you know, in uneven ways, but the point is it does produce results.
So that's what we've been discussing today as we wait for whatever form the government is going to take tomorrow. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.